I mean, and you'll always be asked where you're from. But no, I think simply because of how you look, especially because how I, you know, you can tell. So it's different. Even if I were born and raised over here, I'd still be. That's how the questions are.
I was quite confused about my identity when my family immigrated to the States. In grade 6, one of my classes at that time was social studies. In third period social studies, we learned about world history. It was taught by Mrs. McIntyre. Mrs. McIntyre took me on as her personal project and did her very best to include me in her class. When we started our chapter on ancient Egypt, she asked me to do the first readings. Then she asked me to describe my home. Well, she actually said, "Your home must look a lot like ancient Egypt. Can you describe what Egypt, with all of its deserts, would look like then?" Now, how was I going to tell her that I'd lived in the middle of the city in another country, Saudi Arabia? I'd seen a desert once or twice, passing on the highway, and didn't know anything about Egypt, let alone ancient Egypt. Besides, I was a teacher's pet. I couldn't fail her. So I made up stories about living in the desert, riding camels, and hanging around the pyramids. I'd actually never seen the pyramids, I had never seen a camel. My impromptu presentation went so well in that class that Mrs. McIntyre, for the next 2 weeks on ancient Egypt, always asked me to talk about, you guessed it, ancient Egypt. Yeah, the pyramids are crazy. You'll sometimes be walking along them, and you'll see the bodies of pharaohs. There's dead pharaohs everywhere. Egypt is really haunted by dead pharaohs. Of course, I had no clue as to what was in ancient Egypt, so I had to read ahead of the class and incorporate that material in my storytelling. By the end, I was quite the expert on Egypt. Well, my family lived near the monument of Ramses III, known as the nation builder. The monument was huge. It had snakes drawn on it. But the snakes weren't like American snakes. They were Egyptian snakes. By the end of the 2 weeks on ancient Egypt, I had no idea, thanks to Mrs. McIntyre, if I was Pakistani, Saudi, American, Egyptian, or ancient Egyptian. So yeah, you could say I was a bit lost in my identity. And certainly, no one around me helped.
My family immigrated to Canada from India in the 1970s. I was born in Calgary, Alberta, so on paper, I'm a Canadian. But in reality, I grew up as an Indian kid trying to belong and fit into Canadian society. My family is a traditional Punjabi Sikh family, and Indian cultures and Sikh traditions were all a part of my everyday at home. Going to the Gurdwara, eating parathas, celebrating Vaisakhi, all contributed to my Indian identity. But at elementary and high school, it was very different. I had to abandon my Indian identity because it wasn't liked or appreciated. Similarly, my Canadian views on hanging out with friends, dating, or religion were not welcome at home. Like a pendulum, I was stuck in between two cultures, swinging back and forth day to day. I was Canadian at school, but Indian at home, and this was a tremendous balance to strike. I never felt like I truly belonged in either world. Work your chows, no protection, money is gas. Premises, 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 premises. Go back to. Hey, Ekta. Are there immigrant youth in Kingston who might have stories like ours? Stories about confused identities like me, or living with two identities, one for school and one for home like you? In our 4 years of living in the city, we didn't have an opportunity to hear any of these stories. Hey, Osman. Well, there should be lots of stories. Because according to Citizenship and Immigration Canada, Canada has become home to youth arriving from countries all over the world. Over the past 5 years, 240,000 school-aged children and youth aged 5 to 19 have arrived as immigrants to Canada, approximately 50,000 each year from over 180 different countries. According to the 2006 census in Kingston, the number of residents in Kingston identified as immigrants were just over 16,000. So 14.2% of Kingston's population are immigrants, primarily from the South Asian, Chinese, and Portuguese descent.
So Acta and I decided to go out and find these Kingston youth and their stories. This is a documentary about those youth, their identities, how they keep their cultures alive in Kingston, and their experiences of difference. The grass was greener, with an endless flood of possibilities, Katrina. Watch him drown in debt. Land confiscated by the local government. So he flies high in a jet. Plain clothes just exposed him to the harsh winters of life. And his wife won't know about the sweat soaked in the banknote. Sent home, boy getting grown. He starts to groan. Stomach rumbling. Hungry for a better life. Now he's stumbling over foreign phonetics in those verb tenses. They laughing at his accent.
Our intention was to find the stories of both first and second generation immigrant youth in Kingston. But interestingly, all of the youth we interviewed did not fit in those categories of second or first generation.
I feel like the kind of culture I belong to is this sort of immigrant culture. Like, you're not really part of the place that you're... Your cultural background is not so much like where your family is from, or where you live now, as much as it is something that has defined like your experience growing up in two worlds.
What we actually found was many of the youth we interviewed belonged to a third category, the 1.5 generation. Basically, the term 1.5 generation refers to people who immigrate to a new country before or during their teens.
They bring with them cultural behaviors and experiences from their home country and are challenged to continue their socialization and adaptation in their new country. These youth define their identity through a personal and at times complicated process based on a variety of factors such as family dynamic, social context, and length of time residing in Canada.
Hi, I'm Bernadette Velasco. I come from the Philippines. So I've been in Kingston for about 1.5 months already. And I think I'm a Canadian in training because I just learned recently that Canadians are big on small talks, and I know that Filipinos are known for being hospitable, being open and friendly, so I think my culture or that aspect of my culture is kind of in line with Canadians being big on small talks.
Hi, my name is Jenny. I'm from Korea. I've been in Canada since 2004. When I first came, I was only 16. I consider myself more as Canadian than Korean, just because as I was going to high school, as I was growing up and getting old, the more that I got to know here, the more I was getting closer to Canadian in my mind. But the thing is, when I'm with a bunch of Koreans or with my family, I feel more Canadian. But when I go out of my family zone or a friend zone, that I don't feel so accepted as Canadian. I don't know what it is, or I don't know what Canadian means. When I'm with Korean people, I'm way more Canadianized or Westernized than a lot of my other friends.
My name is Mauricio Garcia Vidal. I come from Havana, Cuba, and I've been here since June 2010. I'll say I'm from Cuba, but I don't really know, like, the culture at all. I always say I'm Cuban. I don't say I'm Latin American. Cuba and Latin America are two different things. I think I cannot say I'm Cuban-Canadian or Canadian-Cuban because I've been here only 2 years, and, you know, my experience is not enough to say, yeah, I'm Cuban-Canadian.
My name is Noman Hussain. Born in Pakistan, moved to Canada in September 2006. Been here since. Well, I identify myself as Canadian now because I've been here 6 years and I, you know, hold a Canadian passport and citizenship. But it doesn't change the fact that on your passport still says your country of origin and your country now. So it's difficult to say, but it keeps things simple. I mean, and you always be asked where you're from. No, I think simply because of how you look, especially because how I, you know, you can tell. So it's different. Even if I were born and raised over here, I'd still be. That's how the questions are. So, you know, like whenever I get asked where I'm from, I'll say, you know, from Pakistan, was born over there, moved here, you know, been here 6 years.
My name is Cindy Gao. I've been in Canada for 12 years, approximately. I moved here when I was 6 from Beijing, China. For me, a lot of people don't actually think I'm an immigrant. I guess it's because I spent the majority of my life here and I don't really speak with an accent or anything. But when I do get asked the question, especially this year, I'll just say I'm from Ottawa because that's where I was before I was in Kingston. My parents lived there, and so, like, that's where I lived before. Occasionally, I'll, like, ask them to specify what the question means. Like, do you mean where I was born, or do you mean, like, what city I came from, stuff like that. So the answer just depends on, like, what they want me to tell them.
Throwing punches with collectors chasing me. Cause where I'm from, we bank accounts and still ain't got no families. We got keepers killing seeds, manufacturing disease. Stand, sit, genuflecting, yo. They breaking knees and death spot to it for greed. Evil deeds they do with ease. Who they once was calling mammies, now they calling them nannies. And what's this? You got skills but need master's degrees. Or better yet, you got ideas but ain't got ID. And some of them mad rich.
So Osman, when you came to Kingston, what kind of things did you do to feel connected to your culture?
I don't identify with any one culture. Like Cindy's example, I identified with some strange mix of Pakistani, North American, Saudi, and Muslim culture. While in Kingston, I maintained a connection to these cultures through hanging out with Muslim friends, shopping at Masala Food before it closed, and going to Bhangra concerts. How about you, Ekta?
I kept my connection to South Asian culture through a variety of ways. I sought opportunities to make friendships with anyone and everyone who was from the Asian subcontinent. I found opportunities to play Indian music at monthly Soul Shakedown parties that I DJ at, try to speak Punjabi or Hindi with the friends, with the Indian friends that I made here in Kingston, and find opportunities to bring my family, my parents and my sister down to Kingston as much as I can so I can connect with them in Kingston. So yeah, that's how I felt connected to my culture here. Oh, and lastly, one of the ways I keep connected to my culture is I became friends with you, Osman.
Thanks, Ekta. Others kept their connection to their culture through spending time with family, friends, and through their home communities. Here's Noman again.
I do strongly associate myself with the culture I grew up in, which is, okay, you know, Pakistani subcontinental culture. And I mean, by speaking the language, by dressing up for your own community events, mm-hmm, how you dress up back home. Not that you want to stand out when you go to Food Basics or Walmart, but just little things like that. You know, you're talking your own language, you promote that where you live. For us, for the Pakistani community, we have, you know, events throughout the year. In Kingston, it's a very active community, actually. The Pakistan-Canada Association is what it's called.
We keep the warmth between us. You know, the relationship between your parents, if you're a Cuban person, is pretty warm. You know, you say hi to them, you talk to them a lot. And then you hug them, you know. It's like pretty beautiful to me, and we keep doing that because you're here, you know, you gotta open to the new things. So, you know, the new Canadian stuff.
Hi, my name is Bharti and I'm from India. I've been here for about 8 months from now. We have a big community, Indian community here. So from France, I came to know that there's always something that is going on there with the Indian community. So they organize some Garba Dandiya thing. This is specifically Hindu festival. We call it Navrata. And I also follow Jainism, as I mentioned you before. So for that, we don't have any temple here, but we have made a small temple in our house itself. And we pray every day there. And then, and the fasting thing, I did one fasting with one of my friends, that is Karwa Chauth, that is for the long life of our husband. And so we did it together, and we did the whole day fasting, and we had some stories, and yeah, it was good. So we could follow all the things we were following in India.
My name is Juan Antonio Mariona Melara. I was born here in Kingston, Ontario, Canada. My parents are originally from El Salvador. I see here in Canada they celebrate Christmas on like the 25th. Mm-hmm. Like, well, we have a party like on the 24th. We stay up until we're tired. So
okay.
It'll be maybe around 5 a.m. Yeah, we just party and party. Here in Canada, they go to sleep for Christmas Eve and they wake up. They're like, oh, yeah, Christmas. Also, in our culture, we celebrate 15th birthday, which is a big deal for the female. And, like, we bring a bunch of families from other, like, let's say, other places, other cities that are close by, and we party. Same thing, as late as we want. Some friends tell me, like, oh, you should come here for, like, New Year's or Christmas. But, like, we spend it with our family. We spend it with family members. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if in Canada, like, their tradition, like, they can invite friends and say, well, they're not, like, one of that friend isn't with their family. I don't know. Like, for me, I always stick with my family.
Okay.
Yeah.
My name is Didier Potzi, and I was born in Lomé, Togo. I've been in Canada for about 10 years now, since 2001. My parents watch, like, these reality shows, sort of. It's, like, Nigerian reality shows. They find it really funny, but since I really got immersed into, like, the Canadian culture, really, I kind of don't find the jokes very funny.
Okay.
But they find it super funny, and they're always laughing and having fun, and I try to get in, but it's kind of hard.
Welcome, good evening, adab, sat sri akal, namaskar. Aaj mangalwar ko main Amitabh Bachchan aap sab ke liye mangal kamna karte hue phir lekar aaya hu tez teekha tabartod kaun banega crorepati.
For other youth, religion was important. Here's Noman again.
I think it mostly cuts down to, for myself, I think it comes down to religious beliefs. I am a practicing Muslim. From Pakistan doesn't mean you have to be a Muslim. You could be any religion you want, but I'm a practicing Muslim. So towards the end of the day, there are certain cultural things, I guess, Canadian. I don't want to use that term because I'm confused what that is. After going through 4 years of school, I don't know what that means. But anyways, it narrows down to what I believe in and how I choose to live with that in a completely different society.
Hi, I'm Rana. I'm from Turkey. I was born and raised in Turkey, but culturally, I'm coming from a very multicultural Muslim family. I'm a Muslim, and my parents would expect me to fast during Ramadan for 30 days, and I'm so happy with that because I'm also so willing to fast, so we don't have any conflicts about that. I was only 3 when she brought me to the States. My sister, only one, crossing borders wasn't safe. What she did was very brave. I think about it every day. From Argentina to Mexico and finally LA. Yeah, she made it really far. Someone give her an applause. Got herself a job, an apartment and a car. But the struggle isn't over, so I keep doing my part. Straight spitting out them bars that'll get us to the stars. Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
In our interviews of the youth, we had asked how they connected with their culture. But some of them complicated our ideas about their culture and why it was worth connecting with. Here's Mauricio again.
I think I'm pretty different too. And since I was in Cuba back home, I never listened to the Spanish music. I never listened to the popular stuff that was going around. I never dressed like them. I never talked like them. And I never do the things they did. And there's something I always enjoy to do, and it's unique. I don't know, it might sound dumb, but to me it's really cool. And yeah, in Cuba there's a lot of oppression and a lot of nasty feelings against a different person. So You know, in a school, you're not allowed to have long hair. You need to keep it short, or you have to wear uniform, or you have to, you know, be that the way that they tell you to be, not the way you want to be. So I would always get in trouble back home in my school because, first of all, I didn't want to have my hair short, or I didn't want to wear the uniform properly, or I didn't want to, you know, go to a place where those people were, like, listening to rap.
Jenny and Cindy also had similar thoughts.
I think it's also because I'm getting older, I'm growing older, that I try to be on my own and try to have my own time with my friends or try to do things outside of my family. But in Korean culture, that people like to do things as family all together, and that's expected of me. But sometimes I say, well, I have other plans with my friends or outside of my house. Then they say, oh, you don't care about us. You no longer think of family time, family things, when I'm only trying to do other things outside for once in a while. So I think that's, sometimes I feel like they're trying to get me inside of Korean culture, because maybe they feel like I'm trying to go outside of the Korean culture or the culture norm, that they feel like that's something that my parents have to do. But also I feel like they don't accept me as who I am or who I've grown into.
I feel like the kind of culture I belong to is this sort of immigrant culture. Like, you're not really part of the place that you're, like, your cultural background is not so much like where your family is from or where you live now as much as it is something that has defined like your experience growing up in two worlds, essentially. It's not exactly the best feeling in the world, because sometimes you don't really feel like you belong in either of those worlds, and sometimes you want to belong in both, but it's not really possible. So, like, I'd say the type of culture I belong to is more like an immigrant culture, one that's not really either of those.
Interviewed expressed a variety of ways in which the feeling of difference manifested itself, both in school and in social settings.
Here's DDA talking about his relationship with his friends.
I don't really feel different at all between my friends and me. Like, I just think that we're all one big family, and there is no, like, different color or race. And, well, yeah, we'll make little jokes here and there, but other than that, it's all good. Say we were playing like basketball or something, and I just like scored a 3-pointer or something, and they'll all just look at me like, really? It's because you're black.
Later in the conversation, DDA mentioned Halloween.
I don't celebrate Halloween, yes, because my family is very religious, and when it's getting near to Halloween, my parents tell me if we're doing anything even close to Halloween-ish at school, I shouldn't participate. Like, I shouldn't accept Halloween candy. I shouldn't do any Halloween activities in the gym. Sometimes my friends tell me, ask me, oh, how much candy did you get for Halloween last year or something like that? And I say that I've never celebrated Halloween. And they're just like in this shock and awe. Like it's some really weird thing. Like I'm some alien from space or something.
Juan, Mauricio, and Noman also talked about differences.
Sometimes with my skin tone, I feel different too.
Yeah.
Again, with the traditions we have. Something that I went through like that, but I just feel like, because like I see a lot of people that are like different color than me that are lighter. And like I feel like I'm like the only like dark one in around.
Here, I thought there would be more people like me, I don't know, probably, I don't know, many people are like me, or this is a small town and there's no big difference. I'm not really sure about that. And then I found myself when I was thinking, when I was in the plane flying to here for the first time, I was thinking, man, here I won't be different anymore. You know, there'll be more people like me. It's gonna be all right. And then I walked to my classroom. I walked to my classroom for first time. You know, big curly hair. I have my hat on, but I have really curly hair. And then this black t-shirt with that creepy pictures on. You know, my piercings and bracelets and, you know, all that. And then the people were like, wow, you know, who are you? You look cool, man, but you're so weird. And I was like, damn it, you know? And that's the kind of thing, you know, yeah.
My name, my background, my skin color. My father always makes this funny comment. Every time we have a conversation about if he's going to go back or if he's going to stay here, he says, and he's a really nice man, and I mean, with all due respect, he says, son, you can stay here for another 100 years all you want. The fact that your skin color will never change, it'll still stay the same. And the fact that you were born and raised over there, you were there for 17 years, will also not change. So no matter what, you'll still be associated with that. I try to keep it simple. So, and I like to cite my dad's example every time someone's to ask me how I differentiate myself.
Ekta and I feel Cindy summed it up the best.
I think I'm different from everyone, but I think everyone is a unique individual, and I don't think that it's just my culture that makes me different from everyone else. Like, I feel like it's a large part of that, but it's not the whole thing. I'm also, like, a feminist, and I also support social justice causes. I'm an atheist. That makes me so different from, like, the rest of the people at this table right now. So, I mean, like, I think culture has a big impact on that, but it's not the whole thing. Everyone is different.
De donde vengo yo, la cosa no es fácil, pero siempre igual sobrevivimos. Vengo yo, de tanto luchar, siempre con la nuestra nos salimos. Vengo yo, y aquí se habla mal, pero todo está mucho mejor. Vengo yo, tenemos la lluvia, el frío y el calor. De la zona de los rapis, mami.
Experiences of difference also translated into challenges of fitting in.
According to the BC Centre for Safe Schools and Communities, youth who are new to Canada often face a number of challenges that affect how well they adapt to school, learn a new language, become familiar with Canadian culture, and make new friends. Fitting in is a critical aspect of social integration. And unfortunately, many youth feel they must change who they are in order to fit in.
I spent most of my elementary school years and middle school years in a little town that I like to call Peterborough. Population 95% white. I think there were 2 Asian kids, excluding me, from my middle school. Like 2 out of 600, 800. And growing up in, like, a town like that, I didn't really feel connected to my culture. Like, I feel like who I am now, I'm a lot more culturally Chinese than I was before.
Okay.
When I was a kid. When I was growing up in that town, like, I just felt like there was nobody who really understood where I was coming from. My parents weren't too helpful with that either, because they're adults. They were going through different experiences. So I just felt there wasn't anyone around really who understood me, or, you know, parents' expectations, you know, get good grades and why it was like such a big deal, stuff like that. So I think that made it hard to adapt to living in Canada, essentially.
That was Cindy's story of not fitting in. Here are Mauricio's and Noman's.
To know. But one thing that is particularly from Cuba is that we are all used to body contact. Like, if you have a friend, you see them, and if he's really close to you, you shake his hand, and then you kiss him in the cheek. That's okay. You know, it might sound here creepy or scary, but to me, it doesn't mean anything. And then same, if you see a girl that is not your girlfriend, you go kiss him in the cheek. That's all right. or you can touch it on the right here on the shoulder. And you know, they hug, they do, you know, for us that's normal, and we're used to, like, if you need something or if you want to hang out or, you know, stuff like that, you just go to your friend's house and say, hey man, I'm here, what do we do? Or I need help with my homework, or can you, you know, help me out with something? I have this problem. So here, what I found different is, like, first of all, there's no almost non-body contact here. If you go to a girl and you touch her arm, they say, whoa, that's creepy, you know, you are harassing me. That was, you know, disturbing to me, because, you know, I didn't want to harass her, or I didn't want to, you know, look creepy, but that was my culture. I didn't know about here. And then, you know, I found that really frustrating for me. So to me now, you know, learning that, I see my friend, my Canadian friend, and I'm going to shake his hand, I think about twice, you know, before to do it. Or if I see this girl and I want to say hi to her, I think about how to say hi to her. So that's something that is pretty difficult to me right now, like, to understand what are they gonna do. It's like a chess game. You never move unless your opponent move, you know. That's the idea. In school, like, there was this guy who was, you know, I think in the first sight, deep inside his mind or his heart, he wanted to be like me. But publicly, he won't say it. So the way he tries to tell me, man, you're awesome, is by saying, your hair sucks, why you wear your pants like that, you know, why you listen to that music, that's random, you know, don't be like that. That pissed me off, like, literally. And then I found really uncomfortable to be in a place with that guy saying.
I think in first semester, my only friends were my teachers, I think. It was made absolutely clear that there's no way that you'll be accepted in the first semester. I do strongly believe that's a very cultural thing over here. I mean, I don't know if a Canadian student, white, will go to Pakistan and how they accept him in the first semester, so I don't want to be told to get 100% critical off it. But that's how it was, and that's how it was going to be, and I had to come to terms with it. Yeah. I know it gave my brother a really hard time and my sister, because they started grade 9 and 10, and I had to be there to, you know, get them through that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it destroyed, especially my brother. It bothered him, because he's just a kid. He's in grade 9, and no one's talking to him. I couldn't care less. I was working two jobs. I was working 40 hours a week in high school. So it didn't matter to me if someone talked to me or not. My priorities were different. Mm-hmm. I had to get into Queens.
All of my pity upon you, all of my pity upon you, my luck can only get better, yours is bound to be worse, now I see it upon you, the traveler's curse.
We've been talking about differences so far, but some of the youth like Juan and Didier felt they weren't treated differently at school or in their social lives. Others, like Noman, have adjusted to life in Canada, whether in their school or their social lives. And yet others, like Cindy, growing up in two cultures, have slowly adjusted to the various aspects of all of their cultures. Here's one.
Like, again, it's just, I just feel like I'm that one kid with, like, dark skin.
Right.
I don't really feel left out, though.
Right.
I don't feel left out. Mostly with, they're mostly Canadians that I hang out with, because I like to try something else, too, like, as Canadian culture, to see what they're like, too.
Here's Didier talking about spending time with his friends.
You just sort of, like, know that, oh, well, I guess maybe that they know that there's some things that I can't do with them, and that they just know that next time they just won't really ask. Like, when I was a kid, I kind of really did miss out a lot on going to my friend's house and stuff, like, having sleepovers and stuff like that, and just like the natural things. And Well, now I guess I really do have a little more choice behind it, but it doesn't really happen as often as it did when I was a kid.
For example, all the time I was in school, I'd go out with my friends, but I'd not drink. I am yet to have a sip of alcohol. And I know a lot of my friends, you know, I think people struggle with the fact that they haven't yet mixed in the society. Mm-hmm. So part of it is peer pressure, you know, mixing in the culture, being able to talk to people. I think I did it, and I did it all without having to drink. Or I still, you know, you still go out. You don't have to be a social outcast, sit at home. So still do. I think I managed to still do pretty much everything, but set my limits and make sure I don't cross them.
This was the society I grew up in. I've reached a point now where I can basically fit in with people. I'm still an individual, but I mean, I can get along with most people here. Like, I understand, I guess, the cultural norms here. But when I was in elementary school or when I was in middle school, like the first few years after coming here, like the language, not being able to understand the language, because when I first came here, I had no knowledge of English. It was really difficult to communicate with people. It was just really difficult to understand the thoughts and the behaviors of my peers.
Red is the color of fire. Red is the color of desire. Those little pine beetles are spreading a disease. The Mr. Pine beetles are munching in the trees. Marching through our forests in an ill-patterned baldness. Ascending up the spines in a syncopated...
Jenny struggled to fit into both her Korean community and the larger Canadian community. She expressed the unfairness of expecting immigrants to fit into existing Canadian social norms, such as assertiveness.
In Korean culture, we're very submissive and we're very quiet. We're not very outgoing, or we're outgoing with our friends, but in public places or schools or at workplaces, we're very quiet, and that's what's expected of us. So when I first came, or I still have a bit of struggling, but Canada is a very interactive, outgoing place. Wherever you go, school, work, and volunteer places, wherever you go. So when I first came, my teachers were expecting me to participate in class, and I had a very, very hard time with that. It's not that I don't have anything to share, I just wasn't very comfortable sharing or participating. I was always thinking about how would other people think of me, how would other people judge me. So that was really hard for me to interact and participate. And another thing was that I take longer time to get used to people or get to know people. So by the time that I was getting comfortable, classes were done, or people have their own groups on their own, and it was very hard for me to adjust to that culture, but I think I'm slowly getting used to it now. For the past 5-6 years, I've been pushing myself really hard. Every time I go to an event or classroom or a new environment, I push myself to talk to someone who's sitting next to me, or try to get to know their names. Try to do small talk. I think it was just that I just had to push myself really hard and tell myself that people are not always judging and people are not always try to look something in bad in me or anything. So I think that's how I got used to it, or got better in a way. Not necessarily the time. If I've just stayed as who I was, not pushing myself hard, then I don't think I would have been so outgoing or talkative like I am now. I have a friction at home, actually, because of that. Now, like I said before, I become so Canadianized to my parents or to my family that they think I am very... I guess I've adapted to Canadian culture, but they think of me as very selfish, very individualistic. I guess I expect other people to be outgoing sometimes. I ask, oh, so what do you think? Or maybe sometimes I feel like I'm stepping into their comfort zone. I'm trying not to do that so hard, but maybe I'm becoming so accustomed to Canadian cultures outside of my home. So when I go back to my family or my friends, they say, oh, you're so Canadianized, whatever that means. So that's a little hard at home. And I feel like they think that I've changed so much, and they think that I've changed in a negative way. So that's sad at the same time. I don't think it's so fair, because I know that a lot of people coming from different parts of Asia are very quiet and they have a hard time adjusting. Maybe because their language, different cultures and everything, but also I wish people were more nice or understanding, that they would take time for you to get used to the settings or environments around you, rather than just expecting you to be a Canadian or be outgoing as, or participating as Canadians do. I wish they have more patience in them to wait for you to speak, rather than, oh, you have nothing to share, oh, you have no ideas to contribute, then just skip on you. Then, or I wish they would say, oh, we'll come back to you, you can take your time, or things like that.
We don't want Chinamen in Canada. This is a white man's country, and white men will keep it so.
The people of Canada do not wish to make a fundamental alteration in the character of our population. Large-scale immigration from the Orient would change the fundamental composition of the Canadian population.
You know, when you listen to history, it's his story. He's telling us what he wants us to know. It's his story, it's not our story.
When the youth were telling us about their experiences of both overt and subtle racism, we found similarities to our own experiences in going to school in North America.
I really related to Noman's story about being treated unfairly in a local grocery store, and can recall countless examples of my father being treated the same way growing up in Edmonton, Alberta.
So, for example, there's a bunch of people standing in line, you know, there's a white person ahead of you, and the cashier is white too. And go, oh, hello, sir, how are you today? You know, how'd you find everything? Blah, blah, blah. They pay, they leave. Oh, thank you, have a good day. And then you're the next person in line. You go. And then the face completely changes. Like, nothing. You know, scan the items, pay, buy. So stuff like that, I mean, it's pretty obvious, but I don't want to make a statement on their part. But you feel it. You know what's happening to you. My father would always tell me every time I'd leave my house, go to high school, he said, son, doesn't matter. People swear at you, people say bad things to you. Even if they try to hit you, don't do anything back to them. You know, wait. I was a peer tutor for grade 12 phys ed. Oh, no, grade 9. I was in grade 12, and I was a peer tutor for grade 9 phys ed. And, you know, I get along fine with everybody except for the one kid. I have no idea to this day what his problem was with me. He was troubled, I know, with drugs and stuff, you know. So we were playing baseball out in the field, and I have a baseball bat in my hand. The kid decides to randomly come up to me and use the F-word. Keeps repeating it, goes around and around in 2-3 circles. And he kept saying it, did like 2-3 circles, 4 circles around me, and then walked off. And I had the baseball bat in my hand, and I at that point I'd take a decision whether, you know, to keep myself together. And I was new to the country. I could have done something crazy, you know, probably been in a lot of trouble afterwards. But I was in a position of responsibility, and I took it, I guess at that point I took it all right, and I was mad, but I didn't do anything.
Jenny and Mauricio have had their own experiences of racism.
I've applied for a lot of Western or Canadian restaurants, including Keg or Meglo's, different westernized restaurants, but and also I applied for some Asian restaurants. The places that called me was only the Asian restaurants mm-hmm. and none of the other restaurants. So that's when I felt, oh, maybe because I look Asian and on my resume, my names and everything, maybe because of that, that they don't think I'm capable of doing other works or interacting with Canadians. I remember last summer when I was applying for the jobs, I remember walking into one clothing store and I asked for a manager if I can drop off my resume. And the guy who was working there was the manager, and he just told me to, he didn't even look at me. He looked at me thinking that I was a customer asking questions. And then as soon as I asked if I can drop a resume, and he just said, oh, just drop it on the counter. And then he didn't even ask for my availabilities or anything. He just, yeah, just leave it there. And then, yeah, that was it. So I just felt like he didn't even consider me for that job. And it was just a simple cashier type of job, so I was very unpleased with his reaction. That's when I actually felt like, oh, I guess people do actually treat me or other people from different countries differently from Caucasians.
My true opinion about high school, it sucks, definitely. There's a lot of, you know, people from other countries. I think it's a most multicultural school in town. And although they have all that kind of stuff, deep inside, there's still racism and there's still stereotyping and that kind of stuff. Like, walk into a class and, you know, the teacher will, you know, do the attendance. Everyone, they say their name really nice or, you know, the English name. And when they come to mine, they say something. They don't say my name properly. They say something. And that's it. They don't say, oh, am I saying it right? Am I saying it wrong? For example, there's this Canadian kid who has an Italian name. They say, oh, am I saying it right? You know, that kind of stuff. Mine, they say it and that's it. Or do you know, in the student services, they call your name if you, you know, get in trouble or if you had a call from your mom. They use a microphone and say, oh, please, Jackie Jackson, can you come to the student services? If there's a international child or me, they go to the room I am studying. They say, oh, you're getting a call from line one. Go to the student services. And that disturbs me a little bit. There's this one time that I really got mad. I had a t-shirt that has a band. It was called Slayer. And the t-shirt had a skull holding a shotgun. So, you know, you might say, oh, I'm smiling, because here I don't want to hurt anybody, but there's a lot of taboos and a lot of things that people try to hide, but they can't. So I had that t-shirt where I was wearing since September, and it was November when I, you know, was in this English class, and the teacher say, oh, your t-shirt is inappropriate, go change. And I say, I'm not gonna change it, and I got sent home for that, just for that. And you know, I don't really think it was a t-shirt what was the problem, because there's, you know, there's more violence in just a single person in the school than just a t-shirt. You know, just because I have a t-shirt of a shotgun or someone holding a shotgun doesn't mean I'm gonna go and kill anybody. But you go to the school and just look for one single boy, they say, hey man, I'll beat you up, you know, that kind of stuff. And that's oppression, and deep inside the t-shirts is racism. I don't you know, want to hurt anybody, but that's true. There's a lot of taboos, a lot of that kind of stuff that are there, and they just want to hide it, but they can't, because I think it's part of their mentality.
Flood the city like the levees broke. Smoke heavy, tell my tongues are sweaty. Soap, we ready, folks, you ready, no. Got a petty flow, a steady dough. Rising crust, chains, veins, lanes. Make it rain like confetti throw. A show in the snow ain't concerning with the weather though. Lyrics rubbing beats, causing friction for whatever spoke. Bringing that heat to the street, we be whatever. Folks, whatever you be smoking and talking, we be that better though. Whatever you be snorting and sniffing, we be that better coke. In your nose, the movement grows with every single.
Put your hands together, making his debut, Mr. Russell Peters!
Thanks, kid. I like to look at white people when they look at me because they get real confused. Because everybody says white people are racist, but you know, like with black people, you know what to expect from them. You know when you see a white guy, you know what he's thinking. When I see a white guy, I like to look at the look on his face going, I want to racially abuse this guy, but I don't know what fucking race to go with. Just so you know, brown is now the new black. You guys are off the hook. You should thank my people for this shit. You can walk through the airport now. A black guy can walk through the airport with a big ass bag of weed, and security be like, hey. And the black guy be like, hey, look, a brown guy. I'm like, oh, sorry, sir, go ahead.
You know, some jokes, like, sometimes they think I'm Mexican. I'm not Mexican. I try to tell them, no, I'm not Mexican. I'm from El Salvador. Well, my parents are, but that's my background. And they just start making, like, jokes of, like racist jokes. Like, I can't really say them. I take it, like, as a joke, too. Like, I don't get mad at them and just, like, oh, I'm gonna beat you up because you said that. Like, no, I just take it as a joke. Because, they also joke around with their own race, too. So, we don't really feel angry against each other. We just chill and laugh together.
Like, I just think that a lot of people that I meet are sort of close-minded about, like, the different countries there are. Like, they really just think of the whole, the bigger countries that they always hear about. If somebody comes and then starts speaking French, they'll be like, oh, you must be from France or something. Yeah. Like, some people think I'm from, like, Nigeria. And, like, I don't know, like, even sort of the small places that I don't really know about, like Chad and stuff like that. It doesn't really make me feel like really bad. At least they got like the whole continent rights, at least.
There is no one immigrant story in Kingston.
While their stories were unique, they also intersected in certain areas, such as experience of difference and racism. Similar to my own experiences as a second-generation immigrant, these youth continue to face pressures, stresses, and challenges as a result of their immigrant identity, in addition to all the stressors associated with being in high school. But what I found inspiring and hopeful was that they all demonstrated tremendous patience, flexibility, and resiliency, something I wish I had more of when I was their age.
The stories of these youth struck home with me. When Cindy talked about being an immigrant stuck somewhere in between, I thought of my own story about sixth grade. That year, I was in between identities at home and school. At home, I was a Pakistani, and at school, I alternated between American and ancient Egyptian. But the most striking part of these interviews for me was the tension everyone lived with. The tension of belonging somewhere and nowhere, as in Mauricio's case. He didn't feel any belonging in Cuba or in Kingston. There was also tension in our interviewees' experiences of difference. I think Jenny said it best when she talked about her struggle to adopt Canadian socialization. At the end, she argued that asking immigrants to adopt Canadian values was unfair, even though she had done exactly that. But I think I side with Cindy on this issue when she says in our interview of her, whatever Canadian values are. There was also tension in Juan and DDA's experiences of racism. Where does a joke about race start and end? For me, the most amazing part of our interviews with all these youth was being reminded of just how well all of them live with all of these tensions in their lives. Hector and I would like to thank everyone who was interviewed for our documentary. Didier, Juan, Noman, Cindy, Mauricio, Bernadette, Rana, Parthi, Levania, and Jenny. We'd also like to thank Emily for her support with the interviews. Avi, our CFRC volunteer, also deserves our thanks. We'd also like to thank Beth Perot from Pathways to Education and Libby Drew from CFRC. Finally, we'd like to thank CFRC for the opportunity to make this documentary. Music credits are in order of appearance. Lal, Belong, Humble the Poet, Life of an Immigrant, MIA, Sunshowers, Nomadic Massive, Where I'm From, Dumbfound Dead, Are We There Yet, Talvin Singh, Devotion, Chokeeptown, De Donde Vengo Yo, Mos Def, Mathematics, J Dilla, Love Is, Jeff Berner, Traveler's Curse, Mo Clark, Red, No Luck Club, Our Story, Babe Ruth, Mexican, Mohammed Saeed, Exhibit K, Humble the Poet featuring Sick Knowledge, and Selena Dillon. J Dilla, So Far to Go, credit to Russell Peters for his comedy.